This podcast is brought to you by Villanova University on iTunes U. Please visit us on itunes.villanova.edu.
I'm very happy to be here, and I'm very happy to share my story, the entrepreneur story. The one thing I would love for you to take away from this presentation is really to be inspired. Like Dr. Klinger said, I had never had done anything like this before. I actually graduated from Columbia University and studied dental hygiene and oral pathology with a teaching degree, and never thought in a million years that I would be manufacturing a beach-related item versus a teeth-related item. So that's part of the evolution of what an entrepreneur is, basically. So how did my story begin? My story begins, I brought three of my children to the beach one day, and I think it's just being a very concerned mom or perhaps having the medical background, I'm bringing not one, not two, but three beach umbrellas to the beach while the kids are, you know, while the kids are napping, I want them to be in shade. So I figured that bringing a beach umbrella to the beach was going to be like, you know, a nice day at the beach. But we all know that that is not true. So I had a problem, and I was determined to come up with a solution. And that problem, as you can see, was coming to the beach with not one, but two beach umbrellas. And just imagine, I'm sitting. I wait all winter long to sit down under the umbrella to read that summer novel. But what's mom doing? She's holding down, like I said, not one, but two beach umbrellas. Where's that summer novel? Pages are flapping in the wind as it's sitting on my lap. I can't let go, because if I let go, as you know, they catapult and they cause damage and hurt somebody. So I'm thinking, there has got to be a better way. And in the midst of sitting there for 30 minutes, 35 minutes while the kids are napping, 45 minutes, I had the aha moment. What do you think I was doing for 45 minutes? I'm doing nothing but staring at the water and sand. And it hit. I went, oh my gosh, why not use the sand? There's plenty of it to weight down these umbrellas and create sand pockets. And voila, this is the invention. It is a barrel attached to the pole with three pockets. Okay, so now the story begins. So you come up with this idea. See how great all the peacefulness is? Okay, so all of a sudden I'm thinking to myself, I have this idea. What am I going to do? How am I going to get this idea from my head, in my hands, in a package with a barcode on it, in front of buyers, on a store shelf, into the hands of a consumer? I've never done it before. So my tagline in this presentation is something that I kept thinking the entire way, every single step that I had to take, and that was, it's something that my mother and father had told me when I was really young, and they would say, when I came up with a problem and I didn't know how to like get the Girl Scout badge, and I would say I was having a difficulty, they always said the same thing. They said, Barbara, just figure it out. If somebody else could do it, so can you. So it was a very good line, mantra, tagline that I had for the next several years, because when you have never done anything before, which most entrepreneurs do deal with, you are up against an incredible amount of like challenges. You may know what's the next step, you just don't know how to execute the next step. So I started thinking, how am I going to make these bags? So the first thing I did was I drew out the bags. The next thing I did was I went to Home Depot, and I thought, how am I going to get these bags to stay on the umbrella pole? As you can see here, this is so rudimentary. This is plumbing supplies. And the reason why I resorted to going to a Home Depot, get a babysitter, and took me 3 days to find plumbing supplies is because when I had the idea, I went home and I went to a fabric store. And the first thing I did was not this. The first thing I did was make these pockets, and I made four of them. and I tied them to the umbrella pole. I went to the beach. I was all excited. I filled the pockets with sand. And the wind blew, and the umbrella just catapulted. And I'm thinking, oh, it did not work. But was I discouraged? Oh, heck no. I just assessed, and I thought, well, this concept is good. The execution was not. So I went back to the drawing board, which you will all do when you or an entrepreneur, and I came up with this idea to get maybe a securing apparatus. And this is basically what the securing apparatus is. It's a collar, and I had to find like a washer, and I drilled all those holes in this heavy metal because I needed a way to put the pockets through the, you know, the attachment. Point is, when you have the desire and the passion to do something, trust me, you find all resort, you resort to anything to get it done. The next thing I did was, I never thought about doing this patent in the beginning. What happened was, when I took the beach umbrella to the beach with the anchor pockets, I was sitting for the first time relaxed. The kids are napping, I'm reading that book, the pages are not flapping in the wind. And then it happened. What's it? The people on the beach started coming up to me and they would say, where did you get that? And I'd tell them, could you make me one? And I'm turning everybody away. I don't, no. Like, I've got all these kids. I don't think I can possibly do this. I work part time. And one guy actually pulled out, he was getting a piece of paper. He pulled out from his trunks. It was a fudgesicle wrapper. And he's looking for a pen. The next day, the same thing happened. By the third or fourth day being at the beach, my husband literally turned to me and said, and we looked at the same time at each other. I go, oh my gosh, by the questions that this one gentleman was asking, really pumping me for information about the, what I've done with it, what am I going to do with it? I just said, oh yes, we have this all we're doing something with it. I didn't know what to say. But when he left, my husband and I turned to each other and said, oh my God, Barbara, you better do something with this or he will. Within 24 hours, I was in Philadelphia at a patent attorney's office. And the very interesting thing is, what I didn't know, and thank God I did answer the patent attorney correctly, was they ask you, they say, so have you talked about this to anybody? And I said, well, not really. I mean, other than my partner is the only person, my husband, that I was talking about doing something with it. But I did get pretty good feedback at the beach, so this was a great, product. She goes, well, that's good that you really didn't disclose to too many people, because had you, we cannot patent it. And I was really surprised that she said that. So I thought, well, for any of you out there who has an idea and you're thinking about patenting, you don't want to tell too many people up front. So imagine you are me and you're thinking, okay, I'm going to go with this. I'm going to patent it. The months that it takes to patent it, you just don't sit back. You have to be very proactive. So I'm thinking, during this time it's being patented, I better learn about how to sell. I had no clue. How do you package it? How do you get a barcode on it? How many should go in a case pack? What should the charge be for it? And what I discovered was, going to trade shows with my prototype packaging and going to more trade shows, you have a wealth of information. Why? Because at a trade show, you meet all the other people that are in your industry. You meet the buyers that are actually going to be buying your product, putting the purchase orders in. You meet people that are in your industry that are also just like you, trying to sell. They're smart too. They've been doing this a while, so they've been manufacturing and they've been warehousing things and they're trying to get distributors. Why not use that time to start asking a million questions? And that is what I did. So a million questions were asked, and then I found my factory. Now, great story here. When I first wanted to find my factory, I wanted it to say my product made in the USA. And the first trade show I went to, I had all my flyers, all my paperwork. ready and pricing to have this thing made in the USA. Now, remember what it looked like. That's what the package looked like. This is what I came out with first. Eventually came out with a beach umbrella with the matching pockets, but that's what I had to work with first. So because I'd never been in retail before, I really had no idea about pricing. But because I was going to have it made in the USA, that little package was going to cost over $20. It would be like $25. So I went to my first trade show, and a buyer of a store in Myrtle Beach who has like 15 stores, he loved the product. He goes, oh my God, brilliantly simple. What a great, oh, let me see, what are your pricing? I said, well, I don't have them all manufactured yet, but we're going to be ordering them for next season. And he goes, okay, look at the pricing. You should have seen his face. He went, oh, what? He goes, I can't buy it for this. I don't think I'd even sell it for this. And he goes, where are you planning on manufacturing? And I went, in Wisconsin, USA. And he goes, literally, this older gentleman went like this. Look, no way, you are never going to make it. Now, this is the first day, the first hour of a three-day trade show. But the reason why you go to trade shows is because you need to learn and ask a million questions. Well, the second trade show I went to, I did find my factory, an overseas manufacturer, because I got the message. The interesting thing when you start producing a product and you're packaging it and you're getting ready to sell, all these little things come up that you do not anticipate. So imagine this. I am emailing my factory over in China. When I have a major problem, I actually have to stay up really late at night to call them, because when I'm going to bed, they're waking up. A whole bunch of things, you know, you have to just kind of get used to when you're dealing with an overseas manufacturer. So I'm sending them all my photos, and I'm sending them the sizes, everything that I want. And I get this email, and it says, Barbara, send over your barcodes. And I'm thinking, barcodes? Like, I'm like, by myself, if you were a fly on the wall, I literally was talking to myself and going, barcodes, you mean to tell me those, okay, on the back of the Campbell's soup cans, that black and white stripes, oh my God, he needs them now, how am I going to get a barcode? And what's interesting too is, when you're an entrepreneur, you're doing all of this on your own. It could be, you have a service that you're developing, a product, an app, no matter what it is, the process is the same. So you're asking yourself all these questions. So we're lucky we have internet. So the first thing I Googled was barcodes. Long story short, I get a barcode company on the phone. I pay them $780, and it says it's going to take 2 weeks. I pay a little extra to have it done earlier because I'm all excited that the factory is a go and they want these barcodes. And 7 days later, I get this big, it's a certificate, a thin piece of paper, and I'm looking in this envelope for all the barcodes, and I don't see any barcodes. I'm freaking out. So I call the company, and I go, I paid almost $800 for barcodes, and I don't see a single black and white stripe anywhere. And they, on the phone, I had a really nice lady, and she goes, oh no, dear, you got the barcode identification number for your company. If you want the black and white stripe labels, that is called the artwork for the barcode. And there are various companies throughout the country that will do your artwork. And I'm going, oh, so hang up the phone, contact an artwork company, give them my numbers, and barcodes were generated. So you just have to have that passion to figure things out, because that's what I did, as I said, the entire time. So now I have this manufacturer. Can you imagine thinking, all right, the manufacturer says their minimum order is going to be like 4,300. Well, I only wanted like maybe 200 to start. So 4,300, okay, coming in. So now I have to figure out, where am I going to store all these things? You can't store them in your garage. I had to go out, hit the pavement, and start looking at warehouses. Who here knows where your local warehouse is? I certainly didn't, but I found them. You go in, negotiated these contracts, and I got a warehouse. Okay, now the next thing I had to do was, if I wanted to start you know, getting my product out there, I started going to the mom and pop shops at the boardwalk, at the New Jersey Shore. And it was smart that I did that, because when you start a business, a product like this, you always want to start small. I can't tell you how many times, you know, I do bring products to QVC, but over the years, so many new entrepreneurs, they're saying they want to start playing with these like big multi-billion dollar Walmarts and Targets right away. They think that this is the greatest product that they have and they just want to start doing it. Huge mistake. You never want to start playing with the big boys first, because you do one error. Even like the markings on your case boxes could be wrong. The barcode could be placed in the wrong corner and you like ignore the specifications that they give you when you're going to be a vendor for a company like that. So I started really small. And eventually, once I did well and I worked out the kinks and I learned how to better package something and I learned how to better create not just boxing it, but the package itself had to be changed 3 or 4 times. Then I had to learn how to be competitive with my pricing. When I felt ready, I was ready to go to the big box stores. And in order to do that, you cannot be afraid to ask a million questions. When you have the opportunity and you are with a buyer, ask them. For example, this is called a price sheet. I knew I needed a price sheet. I never saw a price sheet. They don't teach you that in dental hygiene school, what a price sheet is. So I had to come up with my own price sheet, and they enjoyed it. They you know, the guy looked at it, he goes, you're missing a lot of information, but I see what your prices are. And I just said to him, I says, you know what, let me just be honest. You are one of my first buyers, you know, that I'm going to. What does a price sheet look like? And he gave me a template. He said, you know what, here's one. Just, you know, he kind of crossed out some information from another company. But by asking the question, I was able to find a bona fide, professional-looking template, like a pricing sheet that has the case pack specifications, where the origin of the product is being made, what it looks like, how many, what the dimensions are, everything you need on a professional looking, you know, price sheet. But see, that was another learning curve. But again, you ask a million questions and you'd be surprised how many people will actually be very willing to help you. So as I started to sell my product and get it into these stores, I was hitting the pavement, and this is no lie. I literally spent 5 months. Now I have 3 children. By now they're in like early high school and late middle school. And I literally went on the road and I learned how to like do all this, planes, trains, automobiles, renting cars, looking at like hotels, making these appointments ahead of time, making appointments with buyers of these big multi-billion dollar companies that never heard of you, never heard of your product, and they don't want to see you. They don't have time for you. So how do you do it? Well, I was tenacious. I hated getting like no response, and that's what happens in those big box retailers. So what I did was I started going to the stores. I went to Walmart, I went down to Florida, and I walked right in a Walmart store, and I met with a manager, and I just showed him my product, and he loved it. He says, well, yeah, this would be a great product for Walmart. And I said, well, what do I need to do to get this in there? And he explained, and I honestly got in as what they call a local vendor program first, which meant I had to be approved to 6 different districts in the state of Florida. In order to be approved by those 6 districts, I had to send a form that I got to each one of those managers. It took over 7 weeks for me to get this little task done. Do you know why? Every time I sent it to another manager of another store to fill out the form that they would like this product, it would get lost. I would call repeatedly. So finally, I redid the whole thing, and I sent everybody a self-addressed stamped envelope with my name on it, told them exactly where to sign with a little flag, and I got all the, you know, all the paperwork I needed. And at that point, I sent that to corporate office in Bentonville, and they gave me what is called a vendor number. Now that was the gold ring. To get and be an approved vendor to a place like Walmart was phenomenal. And I know I talk about Walmart, but let me just tell you, I heard many bad things about Walmart, but nothing really kind of defrayed my thoughts that someday I wanted to play with those big box retailers. And it turned out that Walmart was not only the best paying on time, they gave me incredible orders. Every single person I ever dealt with, and I met with 125 Walmart managers around the entire country, and every single one of them put in a purchase order. I wasn't expecting that. My business model plan wasn't expecting that. And financially, we're not expecting that. However, my point is that Walmart was an incredible company to do business with. So everybody and all those naysayers, do not, and I mean do not listen to them. If you feel you want to do something, you do it. And just a quick thing, I'll tell you. When I was at my last trade show, right before I got into Walmart, I had this beautiful booth. It was at the Surf Expo in Orlando, Florida, which is like boogie boards and surf things and all kinds of fun stuff. Bathing suits, bikinis. And my husband loved coming with me to the trade shows because it was like a lot of fun. And at the trade show, I had only got into QVC. I sold thousands in like 6 minutes on QVC. That's a great bullet for when you're trying to get into other stores. I got into Acme at the time, but just Pennsylvania, Delaware, New Jersey, and a bunch of mom and pop shops. So at that time, I was kind of just really seeing this grow, this exponentially grow, but no big, huge box retailers other than the Acme. So I was at this trade show, and I walked across the corridor to the other guys that you know, called me over. And they said, you know, what is that thing that you have over there? I go, oh, yeah, it's the Beach Pockets. It's an anchor. I told them all about it. And he said, oh, so where are you selling? I go, oh, my gosh, I sold on QVC. I'm in Acme. I got some beach stores. And I'm going to get Walmart. This is what I'm talking to them. And let me tell you, these two older gentlemen, they said to me, well, you will never get into Walmart. And one of them, Lily pointed, he had this arthritic finger, and I will never forget it. And right in my face, he goes, you will never get into Walmart. We've been doing this for 30 some years, and if you don't know a distributor and you don't know a buyer already, they will never take you or product like this. Well, no one has said no to me before like that. And I went, oh. And I allowed all that negative energy just to consume me for maybe 3 entire seconds. And I turned that energy right around, and I turned it into something positive. And I just said to them, I said, well, I said, I guess you're basing that on me, perhaps your own experience, but you don't know me. And I turned around and I just walked back, and there you go. I got into Walmart. And when I got that vendor number, I thought to myself, corporate office said, oh, Barbara, you can sell to 950 of the lake, river, and beach stores. And I'm down in corporate office, and I'm like, you know, I'm overwhelmed with joy just to get down there. So when she said, you're going to be able to sell to the lake, river, and beach stores, I'm thinking, oh, yippee. In my head, I'm thinking, oh, like probably 100. It's like 100 stores. So when I did ask her, I said, well, oh, just tell me, but how many stores is, you know, your program for the, like, lakes and beach and river and all? And she goes, 950 stores. I'm like, I didn't want her to see. I was like, you know, too, like, jumping out of my chair feeling. I went, oh, excellent. And she did say, well, we're going to put your product, we're going to put it in the computer system so all the store managers that if they need extra umbrellas, they can actually order it right from the computer program. Because there's two types of programs when you're working with these big stores. One is the national program, where a corporate office buys for all the stores, and it comes directly from a factory. Or you're part of the local vendor program, where I warehouse everything, and all the stores and corporate, they contact me when they need a product. So when they told me that they were going to put this product on a screen like this big, for all these managers, that when they ran out of an umbrella, they could, you know, go in and find mine, I thought in my head, oh, heck no. There is no way that they're going to be able to ever know that this umbrella has the pockets on it, and this is like a better umbrella than any of the other ones that are going to be on that screen. So do you know what I did? I set out, and I decided that I was going to meet as many of the 950 Walmart stores that I could possibly do. And I only had a small window because I was there, I guess it was like December, and I had to have product ready by like, you know, April, May. So I went to all these Walmarts around the country, and I literally hit 120 some Walmarts. And I would go from Napa Valley all the way down on the West Coast to San Diego. I'd fly back home. I'd come back again on a Monday. And then I'd go to St. Padre Island all the way to like different parts of Texas. And then you did the Panhandle, and there was Pensacola. Then I went down the West Coast down to like Naples and Fort Myers. And then I went home again and said hi to the kids. And I went back on the road, and I did all the way up the East Coast. 120 some Walmart managers, because I knew that if I did that presentation in front of them and introduced them to that product, they would get it. And I was right, because I knew these Walmart managers, they were way too busy to go into a computer and to find something. So what I did here was I went to all these Walmarts, and one thing that I did learn is you have to have a very clear, concise, short presentation. So when you have a business, you got to hone in what is called the elevator pitch. And you'll learn about that. Well, that's about the elevator pitch. That's okay. So then the other creative thing I had to do was, now I got them in all these stores. So I'm thinking, here, this is an Acme store. I got Acme by this point, Acme, Albertsons, Walmart, Walgreens, still showing on QVC. So now I'm thinking, if I want to be, you know, asked back the next year and get more purchase orders, so you always have to be thinking like ahead. So I'm thinking, I got to make sure these move off the shelf. I'm in Philadelphia. Florida was a huge market. So I'm thinking, how can I just be really creative and somehow get the newspaper reporters down in Miami? Now, of course, I went for the gold ring. I want the Miami Herald, which was like the, you know, New York Times. I want the Miami Herald to just let everybody know that my beach umbrellas are down there in the state of Florida. So how do you think I did that? Well, I put, you know, the thinking thing on. Be creative. This is what the center is all about. And I thought, why not call one of the store managers at an Acme, ask him if he would be interested in doing a community, because I thought community would then transfer that the newspapers would want to come in, do a community service, and it would be Meet the Inventor Day of this, you know, fabulous brand new beach umbrella that doesn't blow away. He loved it. He was all over it. So immediately I called the newspapers, and no one's returning my calls. And I did not stop. I kept calling, I kept emailing, I kept calling, and I kept calling, and I kept calling. And then I called other people in the newspaper department to tell them who was the person in charge of doing these lifestyle things. And honestly, I was elated. A journalist from the Miami Herald came and did a full feature, took photos. I got pictures taken with some people that were asking questions. And I just wanted a little blurb, just anything to let the people know. She put me on the front page business section of the Miami Herald. I got so much business. Those stores were ordering nonstop. But it, once again, tenacity. Figure it out. There is a way. Be creative. Keep thinking, how are you going to do it? And it comes to you. Oh, okay, no. Okay, so then before you know it, once you get in these big stories and all the media, then more media wants you. I was on, there's a TV show in the mid-90s called The Big Idea with Donnie Deutsch. I had a documentary done by Lee Woodruff for NBC News. I was on NBC Fox News. This was Kiplinger Magazine just last year. And Moore Magazine did a phenomenal, like a three-page story, flew me out to Malibu Beach to take photos of me on the beach and do this whole story. So once that happened, it was like, okay, this is like so awesome. So it just doesn't stop there. All of a sudden, I'm being asked to go to the Golden Globes because in 2008, the Golden Globes was bringing in products for their celebrities because so many celebrities were having babies. And they wanted to know, would I be interested? And I'm thinking, oh, seriously, am I interested? Of course. So I end up going to the Golden Globes, and that's Denise Richards there, as you see, and Tori Spelling, and I probably like 50 other stars that I met, all have my beach umbrellas. Now imagine that bullet, that sales bullet, for the following year, getting more stores. I go, oh, I went to the Golden Globes. I mean, all the celebrities have these now. And then before you know it, I'm on The View with Barbara Walters. And Barbara Walters and Joy and Elizabeth, they vote my product the best summer product. Now imagine that bullet. Now I'm going to go to Target or into Walmart, into all of them. Barbara Walters says this is the best summer product. Everybody's buying this. I think you should probably be getting this one too. And they go, okay, here, where's your purchase orders? You know, it's like, so it happened. All these good things happened. And one thing does, you know, when you're in your business, nobody has a crystal ball, but I highly recommend whatever you decide to do, have a 5-year plan, have a 10-year plan. Do you want an exit strategy? I kind of knew as the company was growing, I wanted an exit strategy. I wanted to exit out of this. It just kept growing bigger and bigger. And you come to a crossroads and you say, do I want to stay in this? Do I want to buy more capital equipment, move into larger offices? Or did I pretty much, you know, gave it roots and now I want to give it wings and take it to another company that can, that have all the staff needed and they have all the computers and all the desks and everything that they need to do. And that is what I opted for. So I literally was praying to God every minute of every hour that last year, which was in 2009, for a licensing agreement or a buyout. And I got a licensing agreement, which means I gave the patent and all the rights to a company, and I get tiny, tiny little royalties for the life of the patent, and I'm very happy, and I'm doing what I love to do. And what I love to do now is sharing my story and helping entrepreneurs. I have a consulting business. I take products to QVC, and I pretty much kind of wound that down just as of like this past month, because now I'm more involved here at the ICE Institute. And this is where I am now. So just remember, don't let anybody ever tell you that you can't do something. All that you need to do is just figure it out. And there I am in front of Walt with my big fat first check. That's it. I'll take questions. Yeah, exactly. That's how I felt, seriously. So, thank you. Yes. So who here has an idea for a service, an app, a product, a business? You see yourself running a business someday? Okay.
So way in the beginning, mm-hmm. when you did your first order, where did you get your funding?
Home equity line of credit. It was $43,000. Yeah, but it's okay to do a home equity line of credit that low. You just do not want to do the home equity line of credits where the following year we needed, so it was $43,000, the following year like $120,000, and then the following year we needed like $250,000, and then the following year we needed like $300,000, and then the following year we needed $780,000 in cash for one customer. And it had to be cash because it was being wired to the factory to meet the orders. That had a lot to do with my exit strategy. I kept thinking when I was praying to God, I can't have another year like this. Like, where do you get the money, the funding? I needed so much more, and I knew the following year I needed three times. I needed $3 million. And for me, it just seemed the licensing agreement going was the best way to go for me because you know, they had the infrastructure and, you know, they're already established. But I did work. I hit that pavement. I really worked hard. So, have a question?
When you did your licensing agreement, did you sell the patent outright?
No, I never. No, I actually still own the patent, and they have it for a few years. And you know, it took them a while, though. To nobody sold like me, and I offered a dozen times, I will help their entire sales team. And there are, like, you know, 12 guys and three women. And I just got so much pushback, like, you don't need to show me how to sell. But they still never sold the way I sold. So, but it just worked out a lot better, and I am a lot happier having the royalties come in, and I don't have to worry, and my kids aren't screaming upstairs to my third floor office and going, when's dinner? And I'm like, oh my God, the last time I looked at my watch was 2 o'clock, and it's like 6:30. Time goes really fast when you're really working. So, sure, anybody else have any? Go ahead, Samantha.
Were there any decisions that you regretted throughout your process?
Mm-hmm. One, using home equity line of credit for stage 2 and 3. But after that, we actually had banks. Banks actually eventually saw how many purchase orders that I had, like from Walmart, from doing all the travels. And we got over $250,000, and that was like the maximum. And I was like shocked.
So, just a comment on that. At the very beginning, her idea was great. And no bank would give her a dime.
Yeah.
Would give anybody a dime, no matter how great your idea is. You have to have a proven, you have to have a track record.
Right.
Strangely enough, the easiest way to, the time you can get money from banks most comfortably is when you really don't need it.
Yeah.
When there would be other sources. But so
that is so true. I've heard that 100 times over, is when you're starting a business, take as much money as you can get. They're going to give it to you, because when you really, really need it, it's just funky the way that works.
Let me follow up on that again.
Yeah.
Women entrepreneurs disproportionately in the United States fund their business on credit card debt. So they'll sign up for all the credit cards that they can get. They'll do it that way. And you can understand. I mean, she was fortunate enough to have a home that she could get a line of credit.
Right.
How many of you own a home? So you don't have that. Now, your parents might do that for you because they love you. If you want to have sleepless nights, start risking losing your parents' home. You don't want to do that either.
No.
So, women in America, women entrepreneurs, have been very creative with credit cards. And you'd be surprised how many people would do
it. It's true. Oh, it's true. Yeah.
Product on credit card debt, which means even if you're making a reasonable markup, you're not making any money because it's all going to service.
Yeah, you don't want to do the credit cards. Well, you know, well, today there's a lot of organizations out there for women, like venture capital, angel investors, and there's just women groups, too, that really want to focus on that.
She's right. It's changed. The environment, the ecosystem of funding has changed. And it ebbs and flows as to how deep in the how early in the process funders will give you some money. But funders don't give you money because they like it. They give you money because they want a piece of
peace, right? Yeah.
So it comes at a price. But sometimes, I mean, she had a choice. She could have gone when she was at that. I need $300,000. I'm going to need eventually $3 million. She could have gone to venture capitalists because she had enough of a track record at that point to have interested people. And but then she'd have still been in it up to her neck.
Right.
and she wouldn't have the comfort of the licensing agreement.
It's true, and I had heard through this process, before I actually made the decision, I had heard, just because I was always putting it out there about eventually I do want to, like, you know, sell it or license it, I did hear that it's most attractive to position it, to sell or to license it when there are not a lot of cooks in the kitchen. You know, when I own the company outright, maybe one other partner, but not a whole lot of pieces there. It's not a, you know, attractive. So you had a question, yes?
Yeah. Juan. How long did it take for you to become profitable, and then when you finally did, what was, you know, like a turning point from?
It was about 6 years.
Okay.
And now think about it. If the first year you put all this money into selling, you're paying for all your goods. Imagine that you're doing well. The following year, you have twice the amount. Well, you only made what you made from the first amount. Now you need to use that money and then some to bring in product for that second year. Then the third year, it's even bigger. Now you've got to take all that money, and it keeps going like this. You keep saying to yourself, when am I going to start pocketing the money to buy fun things? It really, if you have a, you know, your business is expanding and you have this company that's just constantly growing, this is the way it is. And then eventually your margins, you get very smart in how you sell and you start reducing your cost. I got finally into a national program. And remember I said the national program, I do not have to warehouse anything. National program with like Acme Markets and Albertsons, they put huge purchase orders in for like all the stores. We're bringing over like 38 containers. And each container has like 40,000 units on it. I mean, it was a big deal. And I had to keep a spreadsheet like that was the size of this, where all the containers were going. And I had 3 kids and a husband and a life that I lost. but it was all good. It was all good. But just know that is part of being the entrepreneur. And when you know that going into it, just embrace it. Embrace all of it, the expanding, the obstacles, all of it. And you'll be absolutely fine, because that is the way it is. Yeah. Anybody else? Yes.
What's the retail price?
Okay, there was two. For the actual pocket anchors, it was $12.99, and then with the beach umbrellas, it was. I had three styles. I had the Walmart version was $19.99, and then the Walmart actually agreed to take a higher end, and that was $24.95. And they were really pretty beach umbrellas. I think I showed them in some of the pictures. They took them, and then I even had a higher end line that was the boutique, the smaller stores, and online, and they were $65. They were larger. Oh, and I also got into Lilly Pulitzer. I did the Lilly Pulitzer. Most of the women, I don't know if men know what Lilly Pulitzer is. I did all the Lilly Pulitzer umbrellas because I was shocked, because I love Lilly, and my daughters love Lilly. They had no beach umbrellas. So I went to the corporate office and I got an appointment. Remember, you keep calling and calling and calling and calling until they finally, like, you know, respond. I got an appointment with the owners of Lilly Pulitzer, and I said to them, "You're Lilly. You're like known for Palm Beach. How could you not be producing a beach umbrella? Let me do that for you, and I'll show you like how it will be done." And they said, "This is perfect timing. We're getting into domestic things like, you know, bedspreads and home goods and things like that."
So on your I'll take one of them.
Yes.
The bags, would you say it's $12.95 or something like that?
The bags were $12.95, okay. Just for the bags and the anchor in the package. Yes.
So what was your wholesale price?
Now it depends on who I sold to and how many quantity. Oh, yeah. But basically the wholesale price was $7.99 to Acme. They did not work on the margin that the smaller stores work on. If I sold to a smaller store and they bought it for like something for like $10, they would absolutely sell it for no less than $20. But the big box stores, depending on what my expenses are, they did not work what that's called keystoning, where they double it. If I sold to Walmart for like $7.99, they would sell a product for like, you know, $14.99. I mean, it wasn't a full market.
So when you went to the trade show,
yes,
what was the price that you had in mind before that guy said to you, "You gotta be crazy"?
It was over, I was showing that it was gonna be like, it was like $24.
Okay.
$24, the price that I sold the beach umbrellas, the nice ones, with the pocket anchors already on it in a beautiful carry bag. That's what you get by going overseas. But I had the mentality, I did not want to go overseas. I wanted to be that kind of like made in America. But sometimes it just does not work out. I would price myself out totally.
Where did you get the idea
of $195 in your head? When originally? Oh, that's what the factory was charging me in Wisconsin. My cost of goods in Wisconsin was like, you know, $14 total.
I was just wondering if you went into some stores at the beach.
No, not at all. No. Oh well, I did see that they had this. There's only one thing on the market. It was those stand screws, and they were selling from everywhere from like, you know, $19.99 to $24.99. But this just was, you know, not that same. But.
Okay. Mm-hmm. In the first class, I mentioned that there were three things. Doing is doing.
Yeah.
Thinking about this didn't make this happen. Getting off the butt and going and doing and investing herself and all her energy, everything in it, did it. What was the other one? There's no such thing as bad news, just new information.
Very good.
You let those two old guys at that trade show get under your skin, the multiple times that nobody returned the call, the multiple times that she heard no, that's, if you take it as bad news, it'll weigh you down. But if you say, okay, it's new information, I'm not going to get to meet that guy that way. How am I going to get to meet that guy?
Yeah.
She lived them out, and that's, I didn't give you those things to remember because they're trivial. They're really important. They're really important. No such thing as bad news, just new information. Thinking is not doing, doing is doing.
Yeah, we got that right. Don't take no.
How did you make the contact in China?
At the trade show, at the second trade show I went to, I learned that these trade shows are really the place to ask a million questions, everything you want to know. And one of them was talking to other, people, where are you manufacturing? I've got to go manufacture overseas in China. Like, do I have to go to China? And they're telling me, and I'm getting all this information. And just by luck, two gentlemen walked, well, actually, there was a few people who walked by, gentlemen that said, where are you manufacturing? We would like to manufacture for you. And I wasn't trusting anyone. You know, it was like third world countries. They were, English language was their second language, and I didn't know what they were going to do with this. And finally, this one, the last day of the trade show, two gentlemen came by. He had like really dark, dark hair. He had a black t-shirt on, black belt, black pants, black shoes. And he was like, from somewhere, I couldn't even like recognize the accent, but he was with a lovely Asian gentleman, and he said that they run and they deal with a factory in China, in Shenzhen, Guangzhou, China. And I'm thinking, oh, well, you know, I would love to use you. I really need a factory. But I'm thinking in my head as I'm talking to them, oh my God, how am I going to trust them? And I immediately thought, I'm going to take their photograph. And if they don't want me to take their photograph, then that means that they're, you know, not cool. So I said, oh, you know what? Let me take a photograph, you know, with you. And I said, got some my person helping me at my desk, at my booth. And they said, oh, absolutely. And I thought, oh, okay, well, these are good people. So then I find out, I said, well, I just wanted to make sure that, you know, you are like on the up and up, and, you know, you're not going to take this prototype, because I had a $450 prototype made of bisque. Because what I didn't know, what I did do, was just use prototypes, took them to the trade shows. I did not manufacture thousands of these things until I made sure that middle America, I want to make sure that middle America liked this. And just because of people at the Jersey Shore and your mom and dad and your kids and your siblings all say, oh, great idea, great idea. No. You don't start putting big mucks in there until you are, you know, go to these trade shows and you start making sure that people actually want it. And I had told the gentleman, I said, well, if you're going to take this product, I mean, like, I just want to make sure that, he goes, don't worry. He says, no, he says, I have, now mind you, I'm down in Orlando, Florida. He has no idea I'm from the Philadelphia area. He goes, oh, he goes, don't worry about us. You know, he goes, I have 15 stores in a place called Wildwood, New Jersey. And I went, oh, do you? I said, that's where we vacation. I'm from the Philadelphia area. You know what? I will use you, and you may take this bisque sample to the factory because I know the Chamber of Commerce in Wildwood. I know the Chamber of Commerce in three different areas of Cape May County. And if you do anything and you take this and run or you knock me off, and I'm saying it all with a smile like I'm kidding, but I still said it, I'll make sure that all your stores are shut down, okay? He goes, okay, don't worry, like that. But I said it, and it actually worked out fine. For the first 4 years, I actually did use this manufacturer, but as the company grew, I did have some issues, and I did not know that there was something called an import agent. That's how, like, I'm learning. If I had only known about an import agent, I would have solved so many manufacturing problems and issues. But you know what? You live and you learn. The last 2 years, and once I got into the Walmart, the last 2 years, I used an import agent. And what an import agent is, they're in Philadelphia. They do all the work. Like, they go find the right factories. They look at the product when they come in, like the samples. They check, they make sure they're perfect. It just relieved an incredible amount of burden from me. They controlled all the containers coming over. They made sure it got delivered to the warehouse and to the right, you know, retail stores. And I never knew about an import agent until my fourth or fifth year in business. And it was the most, it was brilliant. It was a godsend. It was wonderful. So, see, totally evolving all the time. Anybody? Yes.
Do you have like a team to come help you? Like, you get like finance?
Good question. I was so busy and so overwhelmed. No, and this is the truth. I kept, as I'm working, answering phones and doing all this and traveling, I kept thinking, I gotta hire somebody. How am I going to hire somebody? I didn't have the time. Honestly, did not have the time to interview and put an ad in a paper and be even any of my time even concerned with that. So I kept doing everything myself. Now I look back on how I did like everything myself. It made me just that much smarter now when I consult other entrepreneurs. It made me that much smarter when I would take products to QVC. I knew both ends, you know, the behind the scenes and the in front of the scenes. I did hire a Conestoga High School student he was brilliant. He went to Georgetown, he's a brilliant guy. He came almost every afternoon after, and he just did a lot of the QuickBooks and paying bills and did a lot of organization. And then I realized it was smart. I'm going to contract out, you know, my accounting now because now it's growing. So I contracted out my warehousing people who were like doing the pick and packing, the warehousing stuff. So I got smart as you evolve and you learn. So yes, it was just me, myself, and I in the beginning.
How many of you have ever heard of trade shows? Oh, good.
Yeah. Anybody ever been to one?
Okay. Oh, that is good. Because I hadn't, not really.
I found them just like you. There's so much information.
Oh, it is. I call them Startup Business 101. It is a plethora of information.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's and if you feel comfortable, which you should, if you're going to be in a business, you're going to be able to get out there. When I say ask questions, and even like when you're in people that are like, you feel like intimidated because like they're like the big buyer for a national program at like a $1 billion Walmart. Talk to them. They're in your industry. And you would, like I say, you'd be surprised if you ask them a question. And I think I got my first taste of that, and I think that's why I was so comfortable doing it all these years, is the very first purchase or the very first meeting I ever had other than QVC was Acme Markets, and it happened to be where I live in Paoli. I don't know if you're all from here, but from Paoli, Pennsylvania. The corporate, there is a district office in Paoli, Malvern area, for Delaware, New Jersey, and Pennsylvania. They buy for them. And I got my very first meeting with them because I walked into my local Acme, because they all know me, you know, my kids, everybody. And they told me who I should contact, and I did. They took a meeting. Now, this was my first meeting. Now, I'm used to, like, you know, going to work like a lab coat, you know. And I'm thinking, this is my chance. So I got my suit on. I got my husband's old briefcase, a hard briefcase. And I had my presentational materials ready. And I got in there. And there were two people. There was a woman and a guy that she was working with. And I sit down across the table. And I'm showing them that, you know, the packaged product. Well, they loved it. Both of them go, oh my God, we go to the beach all the time. Why didn't I think of that? They loved it. I said, oh yes. And I pretended, you know, I was like the salesperson for this, you know, because I don't want to say I'm like the inventor. So I said, oh yes, well, you know, we do have those. The case pack is, you know, like 36. I'm talking about it. And she goes, God, this is a really nice package. I love the pictures. And I went, oh, I go, actually, and she's like, look, I said, God, and she's like looking at it even more, and she's going, before she asks the next question, she goes, so, all right, so what's our margin on this? Another thing, they didn't teach the oral pathology class. And I couldn't answer, and I was, in retrospect, I was so embarrassed, but this is what happened. So she goes, what's your margin on this? And I went, well, and I remember what my girlfriend, who's like in business, said in a bar, because she knew I was all excited about this big meeting. She goes, if you don't know an answer, you just say, let me get back to you. So I said, well, let me get back to you. But now I know what margin is. You don't get back to someone. It was a simple equation. It's like a subtraction, a division, like, and you got the margin. And she goes, really? And then I thought to myself, oh my God, I've just been called. I have to come clean. I said, okay. I said, you know, Melanie, that was, you know, the buyer's name. I said, I just want you to know, okay, this is the scoop. I invented this thing, and I did the packaging, and I borrowed my sister-in-law's camera, her digital camera. This is 2004. I borrowed my sister-in-law's digital camera, and I took those pictures. But honestly, I hate to tell you, I don't know what you mean by margin. I know what my wholesale cost is. I know what the retail cost. She goes, oh, she didn't even answer the question. She goes, she was still stuck on, you did this. You know the crap that comes through here? You package this and you took the photo. You did this. You invented this. They were both the nicest people. They go, Barbara, you ever have a question about anything in this industry, you just email me, you call me, and I'll let you know. But let me tell you what margin is. And then she told me. So it was a very early experience. But that gave me maybe the, you know, the confidence to just ask a million questions, and it really worked, and it paid off. So that's it. Anybody else?
Any other questions?
I asked Barbara not to go too deeply into packaging because I know that she had some real adventures with her packaging.
Yes.
But because she's going to come back and talk about specifically about her packaging experiences and stuff.
Oh, you are so welcome.
She's available to help all of you with.
Oh, yes, I'm here.
That's
yep. I will be here, and if it's a day that I'm not here, you have my number, and I can meet with you. I'm pretty flexible, so.
Her cards are available in
yep. And you can Google like my name too, and there's fun, a lot of fun stories about, you know, the good, the bad, the ugly, the challenging, and the fabulous. So, thank you for having me. Thank you.